it's a really good shot for the for this notion of control. I think that what enterprises will come to realize is that the conversational agents, automated conversational agents, doesn't matter whether it's in the chat channel or the voice channel, is going to be a significant feature of those enterprises' brands.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Deep Learning with Poly AI Podcast. Today, I have not just our co-founder and CEO, Nicola, who you've all seen a lot of, but today I'm also joined by Yen, our COO. So today we're going to be talking about the future of conversational AI for both builders and for buyers. And Poly AI is, I think, pretty qualified to talk about this, seeing as though they've been at the forefront of conversational AI, delivering enterprise-grade, customer-led voice assistance for over 6 years. And it's pretty safe to say that the landscape is changing. It's changing fast, and the rate of acceleration, this rate of change is really speeding up. And so I think one of the best indicators that the market's changing and changing very quickly is the stratification. So just being able to see these really tiny conversational AI upstarts joining the arena, seeing a lot of consolidation up at the top with CCaaS providers and with other types of solutions that are starting to add conversational AI into their lineups. But perhaps the most dramatic shift that we've seen is one that sort of is very close to home for a lot of the startups and companies that sort of use analysts to understand the space and also to make sense of it. And Gartner has been the first of the analyst companies basically to discontinue their conversational AI for enterprise category. So to discontinue their magic quadrant. And yeah, I really want to talk to both of you about what this means for the space, how people should be thinking about it. Yeah, what does this mean?
So I think that the way that conversational AI products are being built and delivered has changed significantly. It will continue to change for the next 12, 24, no matter God knows how long. But it also means that a lot of the circles that we've drawn around what a platform means, right, and the functions of a platform are becoming more ambiguous, right? Those lines are becoming more ambiguous. It's going to encompass new functions, drop some old ones, and I think everything is in flux, and it's a very exciting time.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, right? What Yen said about platforms is exactly right. People buy this technology, they buy it in a wider contact center, and they prioritize different things. I think with generative coming in, it's really turned capabilities around where a lot of people can do a lot of things, build a lot of different things. There's a lot of excitement out there. I think, you know, if I were an analyst, I wouldn't want to put down definite predictions or, you know, the topography of a space here because it is changing really fast. So I think I don't have an opinion about the Gartner discontinuing that stuff, but I think it's really hard for a buyer these days to understand what it is they're buying, what they're optimizing. I think it's really important to look at the incentives of the different parties they're working with and the different products that they're selling them. If you're both a builder or a more traditional or like business side buyer.
Let's talk about, so you just touched on the fact that generative AI has been one of the big accelerators of the change in the space of conversational AI. And I think that Gartner said the same thing when they told us personally why they discontinued the MQ. It was really like that was cited as one of the big reasons is because generative AI was changing the landscape so rapidly that they wanted to press pause. And again, like to your point, they didn't really want to make predictions about something that is changing right under our feet. So maybe let's talk about that AI part of the conversational AI piece. Let's talk about the generative landscape. What do we think that impact is on conversational AI? Like what's happening?
Look, I think that it's easier than ever to build a really impressive demo, right? If you're a builder inside a company and you think, hey, I would love to introduce a more sophisticated form of automation, for you to show something around the company and get buy-in for a project, it's very easy because now more than ever, you can build a demo flow quickly, especially in text. And when you do that, it's maybe we should go in and just build this stuff ourselves. And I think what is really then behind the logic for Gartner and others is, are we going to see consolidation of the space? Where it all flows back to the larger platforms that play around here. So think CCaaS, think cloud above all. Or are we going to see a few champions emerge that are going to be the snowflakes of being really cloud-first companies delivering a ton of value for people who want to do this. And of course, I think the two sides of the debate are people going to build all this? Is it just a technology, a platform that people inside every large enterprise are going to leverage on their own? Or is there space in the middle for a snowflake or two of this who will bring, again, a platform, but in a way that's easier to consume towards those companies that stand to benefit from this massive increase in the capability of virtual assistants?
Go ahead, Jan.
Sure. What I was going to say in terms of how generative AI has upped the game is that traditionally for the past, let's say, 6 or 7 years, where AI came into conversational agents and how they function is that we were really solving for figuring out what the customer is saying, right? It's intent-based, right? So that, and whether it's in the text channel or in the voice channel, what people say is a very complicated input, right? It's not necessarily symbolic or just keying letters and numbers. It's everyday speech. And so you have to leverage AI to figure out what people are saying. And we call that an intent-based model. So in generative AI or in generative powered conversational AI, we're sticking with that basic capability, but we're adding reasoning to it. And we're adding much, much more sophisticated reasoning. So a good example would be calling a hotel and say, hey, I'm a little bit hungry. Is there a bar or where I can grab a snack? And then I use probably too many words to ask that question, right? Because that's just how people speak. But conversational AI would be able to figure out what I meant. Then generative AI would be able to answer questions like, so my flight lands at 7:30. And let's say there isn't too long of a line at immigration. When do you think I can reasonably be at the hotel? So that's actually taking several different pieces of information, applying common sense to that particular question, and giving the passenger or the guest an estimation of what they would get to the hotel.
Yeah, and to add, I'm in Vegas right now, which is actually the highest concentration of poly AI clients on the planet. Going to Reno in 2 hours, hopefully. Actually, there's no immigration because it's a domestic flight. But hey, recent question from a client. Someone called reception and said, hey, I'd like some mayo, right? And it's not within the purview of reception to do that or of the voice assistant, right? And what do you say to that? Look, there's a Safeway nearby or something like that. Or like, hey, look, there's a bar and a restaurant. It's a tough thing to answer, even if you're human, because what exactly do you do? Do you bring a jar of mayo that you procure somehow? It's really interesting. But with generative, that question can be answered in all sorts of good ways, because just the objective intellect, if we call it that, of the model now is to really understand the context of it and the context of what it's supposed to do, and then to improvise far better.
Yeah. I think like anybody calling down to the front desk asking for mayo is and getting like a human being on the other end is expecting that the person knows the nearby Safeway, CVS, whatever, where they can go and they can buy that. And now we're saying generative can help answer those types of questions. And so I just have another question for both of you here, which is just that I think a lot of people's experience with ChatGPT, which is really like the first time en masse, like a person could interact with generative AI, it has raised the bar or raised the expectations for the types of reasoning that we think that bots should be able to do. If you're getting a bot at the other end of the call in Vegas, maybe the expectation is that it's going to point you to how to get mayo, even if that's not really in the purview of the bot. What do we think about this? And what do we think about what this means for conversational AI as a category? Do we all need to raise that to this level?
I think that's a thing that comes to our mind first, because like we do so much of this. I think the expectations are still forming. I don't think people expect all this. I definitely don't think the consumer expects it. By and large, the consumer in the US is still just screaming for an operator, for a voice assistant on the other end of the line. It's a bit different in Europe, where there have been fewer of these historically. But I think as we build more and more things, we're in the builder's mindset and people planning it. It's a brave new world. So maybe to some that people that I've spoken with, that's a given. Of course it should work, right? And there is nothing that is natural or obvious about that conclusion. So I think a lot of people are jumping there. And then I think it really opens the space of the most show-offy thing that you can do with generative versus like controllability, robustness. Mm-hmm. And then another set of buyers is really thinking much more about that. I think those guys are almost paralyzed when it comes to reaping the benefits of generative, because they've heard horror stories about how it can just say just about anything. And then on the other, the builder is really excited and ready to jump on and just, well, build whatever it is that they think they can build. And then where those two intersect will be like what we get in the end.
Yeah, I think expectations is really interesting, right? Because it's, I think we're making a leap of logic of comparing similar experiences that maybe the consumer, it's not really intuitive to the consumer, because I think that Alexa has been around for a long time, but people still have very low expectations of enterprise voice assistants. And we obviously review a lot of calls, and there's so many calls that we take where we greet the customer with, how can I help? The customer immediately says, I want to speak to a person. We're like, okay, that's totally fine. But before we pass you on to a person, then what can you tell us exactly why you're calling so we can get you to the right person? They're like, I want to track this order, but I don't have my order number. And we're like, okay, that's okay. So what day did you buy? And so on and so forth. And we carry that conversation to its conclusion and we surprise the person, right? And which is really interesting is that I think, Nicola, this is something that you said a couple of years ago when we're trying to figure out what our mission statement is. And one of the parts of what we want to do is to be the first eureka moment for many people, right? To say, hey, this is not your old like voice automation experience, right? This is something new. It's capable of doing much more than what you were used to. And I think there's going to be another kind of level of eureka experiences with generative models where people are not just looking up their accounts. They're, okay, what are my repayment options? And not really expecting a clever answer, but when they get that clever answer, it's going to blow someone's mind. It's going to, and at that point, give them new expectations for all the experiences that they're going to have over that channel.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think, I guess, follow-up question there is like on that way to a eureka moment, like on the way to where we've had this complete up-leveling of what people are used to, there's that degree of control that's going down. As the sophistication is going up, your degree of control is going down. Because these highly controlled IVRs are like routing systems that just get the person to the right other person on the other end of the call. Like those are high degrees of control. And so just curious to know your thoughts on that. As we approach these eureka moments, what are we letting go of?
Yeah, I think there is a way to mix both things. And I think it really depends on where you're using them, what you're using them for, which subsegment of the market it is. I think those that play with it more are going to have some like really positive surprises, a lot of good eureka moments, but also like brand damage potentially. So you need to basically create a much more modular way of using generative so that you have like guardrails around just like where you're really like letting it take a, you know, a whack at the problem and do really well, and where you want to limit its ability to improvise. It's like having different players in your team. And
sure,
if basketball game and you're losing 7 points and there's 30 seconds left, you're probably best off shooting some three-pointers, right? If you just need to control the game, you have the lead, then I think you don't necessarily need to do the same kind of stuff. You just follow a very different rule book. And that may not have to be generative. That's just a transactional flow where you use things that are really good at parsing input and you don't expect a high degree of variability there. There are other implications here about cost and latency and all of that. And I think that we'll talk about it more, and there's a lot to unpack there, because where the world will be in 2 years is not where the world is now. At the moment, if you were to go full generative, you'd end up with systems that often cost more than humans, maybe substantially. It's happening, but there's a bit more work.
Yeah, it's a really good shot for this notion of control. I think that what enterprises will come to realize is that the conversational agents, automated conversational agents, doesn't matter whether it's in the chat channel or the voice channel, is going to be a significant feature of those enterprises' brands, right? In the same way that their app is, that their website is, that their even product is, right? And it's going to be especially true for brands that interact with customers a lot, like banks, airlines, hotels, right? Who answers the phone and what kind of conversation you have with those brands is going to be a huge part of that experience. So when we're talking about control, we're thinking about it from a prohibitive type of control. You want to put guardrails against the bad things and make sure that only the good things are within the boundaries of the conversational agent is talking about. But then there's a positive side of control where really you're giving the enterprise a way to sculpt a brand identity using this new medium. And all of a sudden, you can imagine how a premium hotel brand or a particular low-cost airline is going to want an avatar that lives in the phone, that lives in the app, that is conversational, that is able to be far more functional than what an IVR or what a chatbot is going to be doing. It's going to be incredibly upskilled to help you in all sorts of things, as important as the app, right? For the brand, if not more. I think that's really interesting. And that really is probably one of the reasons why Gartner wisely probably suspended or paused what an enterprise conversational AI platform is, right? So when they restarted, it could be something that's much, much more important to the enterprise, right? Where the enterprise would spend a much, much larger part of their annual tech spending on this experience.
Yeah. So kind of, it's happening already, because if you looked at the more traditional conversational AI platforms, they really had an IT audience in mind. But the IT audience is not the one sculpting the brand, owning the brand, controlling the narrative. With generative AI, the control is not actually, it can be prohibitive, but it's not intended to be. It's intended, and it will democratize access. It will create a whole new job category, effectively, of a dialogue engineer, the same persona that is both layering down the flow of the intents, et cetera, which you will have to do increasingly less of, and then really making sure that on the right way, you're saying the right things, you're getting information from the right place. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have any advice for them? Yen, you said something about the brand being able to sculpt this new frontier for them, the same way that they were able to sculpt from an app perspective or a website perspective. But if you see those things as fairly contained, things where the idea flows from marketing or brand or experience leaders over to builders within the business, do you see the same flow for a voice assistant? For the voice channel for a brand? And what advice would you give to builders, I guess, inheriting that message of like what to sculpt and how to sculpt it?
So I think it's a really good question. I think that a lot of the vocabulary probably that will exist to talk about this doesn't really exist yet. What we do is when we create conversational agents is that it exists on a graph, and we sometimes talk about nodes and transitions. We don't need to go into what those things are. But I do feel that those will be supplanted by LLMs and what they can do. But I think those conversations are still going to be modular, right? Having sense of control is to define a part of the conversation, what happens in that part of the conversation, what's supposed to happen, and then to be able to then go to this next part or this other part of the conversation, right? And so I do think that there is going to be an emergent architecture of how that's going to be done. I do think there'll be a convergence, right, in the market about how we build and talk about these things.
Yeah. And it sounds like what you describe is the cloud winner, I think, of this space, the person who can get that right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to mix just in between who is actually doing that work, right? And I think the real question is just, like, will it be so easy to build everything with one platform owned by a Google or someone like that? Or is there a space to like really have a snowflake-like thing in the middle where, in theory, there are competitive products there, but these deliver value a lot more quickly?
Yeah.
And cater, I think maybe more in the case of our space, they cater more to that builder, because who that builder is not, there is no definite answer, right? There is IT, and then there is like customer experience. And the more they converge, the faster these companies will iterate in building a better thing. And I think like any IT or any tech initiative or building any product, right? It really should be iterative. And I think the company that can help deliver value fast and motivate more investment in this for the buyer is going to do better. And that's how we think about it. Because the alternative is that people go back to the drawing board and they are building their own LLMs. They are doing a lot of this like basic foundational work that they're making some bets now that they might not have to make. They're making some investments that they probably won't have to do, because the next version of GPT will just be like way better at that. And then like GPT-4 will get a lot cheaper and faster, and they might not have to tune their model with their data. This is really important for people to think about, because the number of times I've heard prospects in recent weeks tell me, and of course we have our LLM, look at it. I'm like not everyone needs a private jet, right?
Yeah.
Like, in fact, the vast majority of people don't. It's a bit of it's a big spend.
Speaking of spend, so I know we're currently at time, and we touched on a lot of super interesting things. So this like concept of control and how it's changing in the platform evolution of where we are, and just the tectonic shifts that are happening within conversational AI. But I think the private jet analogy is a good one, especially as we start talking about generative, as we start talking about building these voice assistants, and the economics of voice, which I think is going to be our next topic. So thank you so much, Yen and Nicola, for joining me, and really looking forward to the next one.
Thank you, Michelle.
Michelle.